Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We tried to do a show last Friday. I wanted to do a marketing show, but I was just not able to. I just started coming down with, as you know, I rant on this. I came down with a whopper of a cold. And the reason I came down with this whopper of a cold is because I was exposed to somebody because they were out doing work and out in the society. I believe that we need to change our paradigm that you have to take full responsibility if you are sick and you go and cause harm to somebody else. I mean, you have no idea how I know this isn't really a reach. If you've got the flu and you absolutely give it to somebody else, you could cause, because that person in turn could actually go and infect other people in their home, in their community, or what have you, and people could die, because people die of the flu. I know plenty of elderly people, me possibly being one, but I know plenty of people that are very susceptible to death if they get sick. They have to take pneumonia shots once a year just to make sure that they don't get pneumonia. So anyway, I'm going to do my best to kind of muddle through this. So obviously this has to be pre-recorded so that if I have a coughing spell or something bad, I can just take a quick break, because I just don't want, I don't want to gross you out, right? Anyway, as you know, this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And this is the only show that gives you the academic evidence necessary to get the federal government back into compliance to the Constitution. Almost every single problem, 99% of all our problems, stem from federal government's noncompliance to the Constitution and states allowing that to happen. The real problem is your state legislatures. We need to focus on getting your state legislatures to call for Republic Review, because that's where they're asserting their authority to force the federal government to get back within the framework. Now, I know that there's plenty to talk about regarding the impeachment, but I told you this isn't going to go anywhere. This is just continually growing legs, and it's marching and so forth. And there's nothing we can do. And, I see lots of people spending lots of entertainers making really good analysis and really great comments and invoking anger and passion. But not any of that has anything to do with the solution. Bottom line, we have a government that is in noncompliance so badly that they're making it up as they go along, and they believe they can do anything they want. And I can tell you, the one thing I want to share as far as my frustrations is when I hear the hypocrisy of the Democrats standing up and calling for these treasonous communists that are trying to do everything they can to undermine our Constitution. They call them patriots, and they're calling them champions of the Constitution. No, they're champions of undermining and destroying and setting aside the Constitution. Now, I've heard some individuals talk about, we're going to have to impeach the next Democratic president. You know what? That is a distraction. See, this is my whole point, folks. It's all a distraction. Nothing can happen that is going to save our Constitution by getting involved in that muck and mire. You want a swamp? You want to drain the swamp? You want to displace all the swamp creatures? It's easy to do. Get your states to assert their authority over the Constitution and force federal compliance. The swamp goes away, just like that. All these bad creatures go away, or at least they are constrained. We need to start enforcing Section 3 of the 14th Amendment as well. But all of these things I've talked about before. And I really apologize for those who just are insulted that we're not talking about these great distractions. I mean, our whole life is pivoting on what's happening with this distraction. If you really believe that, then you believe in a king. You believe that the president has all power. You believe that the federal government can do anything and everything that they want to. And that is a part of the problem. Now, I don't believe you want to be a part of the problem, but you have to shift your paradigm. That Constitution is ours at the state level. If you understand how the states plug into that Constitution, it's not we the people, it's we the people of the sovereign states. So we have to focus our political energy on those state legislatures because they're the ones that are doing this to us. They're the ones that are allowing all of this type of shenanigans. And so anyway, what I want to do, because it's Bill of Rights Day, at least Sunday it was, and so what I want to do is I want to go through the Bill of Rights, because these things are so important to understand. Now, I am going to be taking the position, and as we meander through the next year, you're going to hear me argue against the Bill of Rights and getting them, or at least arguing that we do away with them, that there are few amendments that we have to keep because they are critical amendments, but they're not really a Bill of Right. And I will explain that when we get there to it. But what we want to do is I want to give you some history. I want to give you some background. I want you to understand what the heck Bill of Rights really are, what was going on at the time of the Constitution, its ratification, and how we got the Bill of Rights. I think you need to understand these things. And you need to understand how the Bill of Rights actually became instrumental in protecting individual liberty and sovereignty. You know, 100 years later, when it wasn't even fathomed that that would be the most important thing that could have been done. And I'm saying that I don't understand, or I did not understand, but I see all the connections, and I'm here to tell you that I am not an advocate for the Bill of Rights except for how they served us during the time, or after the time of the Civil War moving forward. I think in an age of enlightenment, we have to acknowledge that having a Bill of Rights is futile and absolutely ludicrous, that at the federal level, Bill of Rights should not exist, that at the state level, that's where the Bill of Rights need to exist, and they need to be enforced, and they need to be embraced. Now, with all of that, as I was going to say on my marketing day in the last episode, but I ended up playing the Ex Post Facto and Bill of Attainders rerun for you, and I hope you enjoyed that. All this stuff is gold, my friends, and I'm not saying that because it's coming from me, but the level of information that you're going to get, it's gold, because you'll be able to actually understand without having to necessarily take the time. But I never want you to take my word for it. The reason why I read these things is because I do not want you to take my word for what these things say or what these men said during these debates and so forth. That's why I read. That's why you can hear exactly their words and not take my word for it. There's way too many people that take a lot of latitude and say, well, just take my word for it. As a matter of fact, that's how we got into this mess, because there were Supreme Court justices that made those types of assertions. Well, just take my word for it. You can't challenge me. And they used their position and basically inflicted us with tyranny. It's really a sad thing, but we allowed these things to happen, but we still have a shot. We still have time. We still have a chance before the Bolshevik Revolution. We've got to get focused. This coming year, we've got to even get more focused. We need to grow the show more. I'd like to challenge you to start spreading the word that, hey, if you're really interested in, one, understanding the Constitution and understanding the solution within the Constitution and how we can save our Constitution, you need to listen to GR on Reclaiming the Republic. Now, with that, oh no, by the way, announcement, big announcement, ding, 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 ding. we've actually successfully trademarked Reclaiming the Republic, because there have been a few yahoos that lack imagination who have, you know, come across my path and are really self-serving, and they've gone out and done some presentations with the John Birch Society and titling their presentation Reclaiming the Republic. And so instead of doing a cease and desist, I figured, let me go get this trademark, because I'd been doing the Reclaiming the Republic radio show back since, 2016, and actually started working on the radio. And my first book, Reclaiming the Republic, the strategy for a convention to reclaim the Republic, was back in, 2014. And so, anyway, I mean, I don't begrudge anybody for, you know, doing great patriotic things, but come on, be a little original at least. Don't steal somebody's, you know, little quip or little, trademark. It is a trademark. This show, Reclaiming the Republic, is very succinct. It's very focused on doing just that. And I think people are starting to understand that the only way we're going to save our butts is if we reclaim the Republic and restore the constitutional boundaries to the federal government. And with that, let me just say we're out of time. We're going to have to go into a hard break. So I will have more highlights and information for you as soon as we get back from the break. And we will be getting into the Bill of Rights, and I'm going to set the stage for you too. But please stay tuned, and we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
I remember the first time, actually, I want to share this with you. The first time I was sick and I was doing a live show and I felt, oh, the show must go on. And so, you know, typically they have like a cough or sneeze button, whatever. It helps, you know, create a delay so you can't, you don't notice the coughing, you know, because it just cuts. It cuts that right out. Excuse me, it cuts that right out. And so I was there, and that cough button just was not enough. And you could tell that I was dying. I was, you know, just coughing up a lung type of thing. And I do not want to do that. And that was a live show at the time. And we're going to be getting back into doing live shows. We're finally getting to a point where I've got the personal affairs of my, you know, a dear, beloved friend in taking care of their affairs, of their estate, and so forth. And so we're coming close to closing that, you know, that chapter so that I can get back into focus here. But what I wanted to share with you is that I know the biggest nightmare that you can have as somebody behind a microphone is, you know, having a cough attack or something like that. And so last Friday, or in the last episode, trying to be this day indiscriminate, we were really trying to just cover, you know, what we had covered over the past week plus. And I know that you had an opportunity to walk through these concepts of the scale of liberty and that concept of, you know, subjugation and full liberty, as well as the concept of enlightenment, the concept of natural law, the concept of republicanism, and more specifically, American republicanism, which is why we have bicameral legislative bodies instead of unicameral legislative bodies. Well, except for at least one state that's violating that concept, and that's Nebraska, but they didn't know any better because the concept of American republicanism was lost. And here's a sad story. The framers did not have the perspective, and people today don't have the perspective of writing like a desktop procedure of what the heck they're doing and why they're doing this. Now, I remember in the Marine Corps, whenever you worked in a shop or what have you, you had a desktop procedure. And, you know, this is how we do things and this is why we do things. And you give some history to this and lessons learned and that type of thing. They didn't do that back then. They just, you know, plowed forward, made decisions, set things up this way, that way, or what have you. So anyway, and then we also covered in our last episode the ex post facto laws and bills of attainder. And I'm giving you all of this information so that you can understand how many principles that our framers had and the concepts that they placed, like ex post facto laws, how those things have been completely ignored and how government has become so tyrannical. You can't look at what's going on in Virginia and some of these other states that are getting ready to start actually violating the Bill of Rights. I couldn't have set this all up on the importance of these bills of rights, or more importantly, the importance of the federal government. Now, the reason the Bill of Rights is still essential for some place like Virginia, and I believe we need to get to a point where we get rid of the National Bill of Rights. But the problem is education. People do not understand the concepts of enumerated constitutions and general constitutions and so forth. So anyway, so what we're going to do today is we're going to dive, like I said, into the history of that. But what we're going to do in the near future, I hope to have Mitchell Nicholas Gerber on, and I wanted to talk to him about the concepts of statehoods out of these provinces around China, Hong Kong, Taiwan, and these other places where Chinese colonialism is beginning to grow and where China is starting to take, you know, its pieces of, you know, territory around it and asserting its tyrannical rule. So I want to have that conversation with them. Plus, I also want to find out how it's going, because one of the things we talked about last year or earlier this year, way back at the beginning of the year, was, you know, how the Communist Party, and he envisioned that the Communist Party is about to fail. And so, I, you know, knowing that they're rolling out the social credit program and some of the terrible things that they're doing, does he still see that? And, you know, what's the battlefield look like in China, so to speak, if you understand what I'm saying, what he is confronting and how he's trying to fight this evil, you know, Communist Party. So anyway, we'll get into that. But more importantly, we're going to get into New Year's goals. And I want to do that right after Christmas. Last year, we kind of did it at the New Year's because I wasn't thinking. I go, you know what? There's a lot of people that don't know how to be successful in creating goals and executing them and creating a plan. So what we want to do is go through that again so that you can understand what all the simplicities of the things that you have to do in becoming successful. I mean, most people don't want to continue doing, I'll just air quotes here, bad behavior, whatever those things are that you want to change about yourself, things that you want to see improvements of, and things you want to be successful in. Well, it's just a matter of taking a little time and brain power and then asserting the energy afterwards and executing your plan. So we're going to get into that as well before the end of the year. So I hope you have plenty, and there's going to be a lot of gold. So when I say gold, it's going to be a lot of really good content for you. I think things that you will really be able to relish and enjoy. Now, you may actually have more insights, and by all means, we have a comment line, 425-270-5416. If I'm wrong, or if I could be clearer, if I could state something more eloquently, please let me know. 425-270-5416. Now, we do have Red State Coffee. I'm not going to linger on that. You know you can get it from reclaimingtherepublic.org. That's where you can find out how to support us. And I also know that you are the reason why we're growing. And I just ask that you keep it up. I would ask, and I appreciate the fact that you listen, but I would ask that you would really try your best to convince people to at least try listening for 5 days. If they don't feel like they're getting something different, I mean, getting a break from the... from this huge train wreck that has been continually going and getting worse and worse. It's like all these trains are coming in, you know, if you just look from an aerial view, your nadir, you know, this the train station is directly underneath you. And you can see the trains coming from 12 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and in all the degrees, 360 degrees around that train station, there's trains bearing in, and they're all coming in at the same time. And they're all coming in at full speed. They don't have brakes. And not only that, but they have the ability on the back end of these trains to continually link more and more cars so that the carnage and the pileup can get worse and worse and continue to grow. That's the type of train wreck that we have been dealing with. And it started with a few trains way back in the early 1900s with Teddy Roosevelt and then Wilson and so forth and so on. It has gotten to a point where they're filling up all 360 degrees and they're doing all sorts of things that they have no business doing, and they're causing this train wreck. Government is the problem. I couldn't state it more simply and more succinct. Government is the problem. So thank you for tuning in, and we ask that you help us, you know, as much as you can and help growing the show. I know you know a lot of people that are like-minded because that's what we do. We tend to, people don't go and spend a lot of time with people that they completely disagree with and constantly arguing and bickering, because that's more like a toxic relationship and people don't go for that. So most people gravitate towards like-minded people, and so you have plenty of like-minded friends. I would just ask that you ask them to consider, and you can have them look at, you know, our reclaimingtherepublic.org website for the podcast and say, if you've missed some of this stuff, just check it out. Just intermittently grab some. Almost all of them are good. They're all, I mean, there may be for some people, you know, just like, oh, well, yeah, he's gone over that. I get this, but some of these things, and most all, I mean, I would probably venture to say that you can't go and grab a segment or a show, a podcast, and say, wow, that was, you know, marginal. I think that you'll find that they're all very thought-provoking. We get into the details, and that's why it's important to maintain an academic focus on what we need to be doing. So I just ask, I want to thank you for your listening. And secondly, I want to, you know, ask you to continue helping us grow this show. Because if you get it, it's really sad that you can watch, you know, a kitten video go viral as people just, oh, that's just the funniest thing. That stuff will go viral. But the thing that will actually save this republic and this constitution, we need your help to make this viral. That's what we need. It's that simple. So anyway, we'll be heading into a break, but we will be in the new year getting into a remonstrance of Elijah Cummings. One of the things I want to throw out real quick, because I've done it a little while, is I am so disappointed in the fans of the NBA that, you know, I can't believe that they're supporting the NBA league that has become the champions for slavery in supporting China. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
I just can't rant enough about the fact that the NBA fans are completely silent about the NBA being the champions for communism and slavery. This is what I was just trying to say. I believe that the media is doing everything they can to marginalize this embracement and support towards state slavery. They believe that we're going to be far better off if they take full control of every aspect of our lives because they're going to be a big part of the control of all of that. Read Plato's Republic because Plato's Republic talks about the necessity of controlling the media or the propaganda machine, as well as having full control, teachers, you know, getting people to accept their role in society, that you are a minion or what have you. This is the kind of crap that Hollywood makes up, and you watch this stuff, and actually Hollywood's really not making it up. What is going on is the fact that Hollywood is only taking these concepts and putting, I mean, these, if you've never read and heard about these types of utopian and or evil concepts, then, you know, there's a lot of good books you're missing. Anyway, let's move forward before I lose my lung here. What we're doing is we're celebrating the Bill of Rights. And I say celebrating because I'm a champion for dismantling them. But what I believe needs to happen in doing that is that we need to shift the Bill of Rights wholeheartedly to the states, or at least most of these things, to protect individual liberty and individual sovereignty. If you understand the Bill of Rights, then you kind of you'll possibly agree with me. But there's lots of people that just don't understand. They believe in, and when people are asked about the Constitution, they usually don't know anything about the Constitution. They know everything about the Bill of Rights. So, you know, I got to write to a lawyer. Anyway, so what we want to do is kind of give you the history and the background. So where did the concept of a Bill of Rights come from? Well, technically, it came from the Magna Carta. Way back in 1215, the Magna Carta was drawn up because men demanded from King John basic rights. And so it was at that point in time, for the first time, government and let me just say, it wasn't necessarily a government that we understand today. It was a monarchy, right? And so the monarchy finally acknowledged that men had rights. When I say men, society, mankind, had rights, that they were entitled to very specific rights. Well, that kind of grew. And it kind of was marginalized, and over the course of history, it got so bad that what ended up happening was the Glorious Revolution of 1688. Read all about it. And it's ironic that 1688 was exactly one century before the ratification debates of the Constitution, when the Bill of Rights became the big thing. It was a century later, and I don't know, maybe it was just this historical attachment. Oh, you know, we're British. We have these, Britonner, concepts of, demanding that we have these Bill of Rights. We had been given a system that was so superior to the monarchies and the heritage of a monarchy and that form of government. But let me get into that. The Declaration of Independence, as we broke away from Britain and declared ourselves independent and free states, the Declaration of Independence kind of built upon the Bill of Rights, because right there in the Declaration of Independence, it talks about inalienable rights, that those were endowed to us by our Creator. That's how this whole thing kind of grew, from Magna Carta to the Declaration of Independence, okay? So, if you understand how the Declaration was kind of our, if you're looking at a foundation, you have to kind of do the excavating. And then the first thing you have to pour down is either sand and or, prepping the earth with some type of movable kind of sediment that you can kind of, put your foundation into. A lot of people use pea gravel, what have you. There's different ways, but there's purposes for that, so that you don't have the rigid, and I just believe that to keep a foundation from cracking and breaking and crumbling, you don't want to have it rigidly tied to the earth. You want to have a little bit of shifting and moving. So what they did, what we did was we created the Declaration of Independence, and I'll just look at that as the pea gravel, or that first layer before we actually started laying the concrete. The Articles of Confederation was more of a framework that they played with in a confederacy. But to be truthful, we did not change the paradigm of a confederacy. We still today have a confederacy. So if you look at the Declaration of Independence, it actually asserted these inalienable rights. The Articles of Confederation had no assertion, zero assertions of individual liberty and individual sovereignty. There was no Bill of Rights. That was all because the Articles of Confederation was a limited and defined government, and it was pretty much inept to do anything, and it was dependent upon the benevolence of the states, which is why we almost lost the Revolutionary War, is because they had no ability to tax and to actually force the states to pay. So they were just like, they were just kind of like a trophy wife, or a, what's a better term for it? A token, board member, what have you. The Articles of Confederation was just a label for, this is kind of who we'll use as our scapegoat, because the states weren't really invested in that. They had all their controls, and they wanted to maintain the control of their own people. They didn't want to share any of it. And so, and this is important, because as we started to set out to, establish the Bill of Rights, there were states that still considered the fact of having to share their sovereignty with a federal government, even as fine, as small and minute as it was, they still didn't want to share. Patrick Henry and Governor Clinton did everything they could to try to undermine the Constitution, but we'll get into that. So even though there was no Bill of Rights within the Articles of Confederation, there was still no Bill of Rights at the state level. And though a Bill of Rights was the focus when they did the, so they did the Constitutional Convention, and during the constitutional ratification debates, the Bill of Rights was the key focus for the Anti-Federalists. So in other words, one century later, exactly a century later, let's call them framers, the Anti-Federalists were just, making, hay, political hay, out of the fact that there was no Bill of Rights within the Constitution. Well, hold on. What state? As Madison pointed out, there is not one state that has a Bill of Rights. They didn't have a Bill of Rights in the Articles of Confederation. Why is it that they felt so attached and so enamored by this concept of a Bill of Rights? As they went through the arguments, they were clarifying the fact that this is an enumerated constitution. You only grant to the federal government these powers. They can't come along and start using, it's a considered usurpation. They even pointed out that it's folly to say you can't do this, 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 and this. And then, because they can easily come back and say, well, you didn't say we couldn't do this. You didn't say we couldn't step in and take jurisdiction over marriage. See, if you start understanding how, if you don't list everything, and this was the whole point of the Federalist and Madison in talking about the Bill of Rights. Well, shoot, I mean, if you don't talk about marriage and you don't talk about abortion and you don't talk about these other things, then they can meander and kind of sneak around the pole and around the woodshed, and next thing you know, they've actually convinced you that they can usurp these powers, because you didn't say we couldn't do this. And that's exactly what James Iredell warned them, that they're going to come along and say, how arrogant are we to think that we've created an ultimate list? They're going to come down years later and say, well, they didn't think of this. Surely they, they didn't add this because they necessarily didn't want it. Whatever. Bottom line is that if you look at the concepts of what the Anti-Federalists were debating and arguing, they didn't have, as far as I'm concerned, a substantial argument. They did not make their case in calling for a Bill of Rights. Okay? So, to me, it was very clear as to why we did not need the Bill of Rights. But as I look at this in a macro view, I believe it was the wisdom of the divine hand of providence that knew that we had to have those amendments in place to prepare us for the Civil War, because there would become a time when all of a sudden people who were considered slaves and the paradigm shift of freeing them and making freemen out of the slaves, they needed to have a Bill of Rights that they could use to, because now it became a tool to use against the states. So that is why the 14th Amendment said no state shall pass any laws that will abridge the privileges and immunities, I'm paraphrasing, privileges and immunities of the individual citizens of the United States, which means these new freemen, because that's exactly what the southern states were doing. They were abridging the liberties, taking away their ability to, own weapons, be able to assemble, be able to speak, vote, and all sorts of things And so that's why it was necessary to, at that point in time, it was the divine hand of providence, because we never really had Bill of Rights challenges until that point in time in real aspects. We'll be right back after this.
Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue, to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so as I was just thinking to say, but as I was on break, I just realized how my throat is just kind of raw from all this talking. And so I'm hoping that I can do the next segment tomorrow, or I should say in the next episode, kind of continue going through the Bill of Rights. But forgive me if I can't, and you might hear another really good interview with maybe Michael Nicholas Gerber or what have you to help set up that, because we'd want to be talking to him soon. So anyway, let me get back onto this train of thought. You have to understand that the necessity of a Bill of Rights came from the concept of monarchies, that in, unlike, you know, America, Britain, Rome, and many of the republics in Europe and Western civilization all had heretical lineage of royalty, of sovereigns, as these cultures, you know, basically sprung out from each other. It was a huge paradigm shift to get away from the divine right of a bloodline to being the sovereigns of a people. And this whole concept actually came from John Locke. And I would just ask you to consider reading Two Treaties of Government, because it was this writing that Jefferson and the framers read and understood as the academic challenge to this concept that kings had a divine right to rule us. And the best part, if I don't want to read the Two Treaties of Government for you, but the thing that just blew me away when I read it was this whole concept that Adam was not the king of mankind. And the argument that he uses for that is that when Cain slew Abel and God came down to address the death of Abel, why did he not, if Adam was the monarch or the king, and there was this divine lineage of kings, then why did he go to Abel? Why didn't he just go to Adam and say, do you know what one of your princes did to another one of your princes? And if you start understanding this whole concept, there was no divinity. It has been an entanglement of how religion has continually justified itself in its marriage of government, in controlling government and controlling people. So American republicanism and the Enlightenment of America was a pure break from that paradigm in Western civilization. Let no one tell you that we are a colonialist type of entity like Britain. As a matter of fact, as we've brought in states into our republic, they have been free and independent states. That only those few things that have been delegated to the federal government does the federal government have the power, the rightful power, to exercise those things. We had a pure representative government within a hybrid constitutional republic at the time. If you understand what I just said, a pure representative form of government means that you don't have a democracy, you don't have a vote, you do not have voter initiatives and those types of things. That we elect representatives, that we, you know, choose these people to govern us, and you know, we have to lick our wounds if they, you know, govern us poorly or badly and oppress us because it's to our own demise. All of these things were, you know, well discussed. As a matter of fact, throughout the ratification debates, Federalist Papers, and so forth, they constantly talked about the need for politicians to meet the needs of their people. Anyway, regardless of how it all panned out, the anti-federalist cry for a Bill of Rights really had no substance other than a heritage or heretical type of need, or, hey, you know, we're from Britain. We had a Bill of Rights. We should have a Bill of Rights as well. It's almost like, hey, you know, we come from the Flat Earth Society, and even though we acknowledge the fact that we have a round earth now, we still want to have these flat earth laws, these flat earth restraints. We created, or I should say the framers created, during the Constitutional Convention, by the divine hand of providence, a constitution that was more than adequate. Now, as I've got to clarify, the need was not apparent at the time. As a hindsight, as a mundane quarterback, you know, sitting in the chair of judgment and saying, oh, now I see all things because I have full 2020 vision here. Well, I see that we did need a Bill of Rights because of the war of slavery. Had we done one thing and one thing alone, I believe that we would never have needed the Bill of Rights. And had we eradicated slavery at the stand-up, at the instillment of this constitutional republic, when we created these United States, and we got rid of slavery, it would have been a whole different ballgame. We would never have needed the Bill of Rights, and schools and civics and government and history would be teaching you and the rest of America that we have an enumerated constitution, that the federal government only has these powers. We don't have to list powers that they don't have. We only list the powers that they can have. That's it. That's how simple. That is how simple our hybrid constitutional republic is, because it's the same thing with the states. You have only granted so many powers to your state government. If you're not familiar with your state constitution and how things got injected, because one of these little things, most all states have these little clauses that say the U.S. Constitution is the supreme law of the land. So when the federal government comes along and says, you need to create a Department of Environmental Protection Agency to interface with our Environmental Protection Agency, well, they considered that constitutional. But that, if anybody that knows and understands the Constitution, that is the furthest thing from a true constitutional standing. What that is an unconstitutional standing. And as a matter of fact, that's how a lot of the state powers that have been grown at the state level have been forced by the federal government. So anyway, with that, we've got the, you know, this whole concept of, well, we got to have a Bill of Rights because it's in our heritage. Well, we had the ratification, or actually we had the Constitutional Convention, and we go into the ratification debates. The Anti-Federalists really started demanding these Anti-Federalist, these concepts of, I'll just say the Bill of Rights needed to be inserted into the federal government instead of the states and so forth, as I've been just telling you. The interesting thing and the turn that really occurred was during the ratification debates in Massachusetts, which I believe was January, February. Just imagine if you've ever been there or you know what weather's like in Massachusetts in January and February. Here, the framers of Massachusetts were meeting, you know, John Hancock, Sam Adams, and the rest were all discussing the Constitution, you know, in that frigid cold. And, here these men were, you know, talking about, you know, what they believed was the great vision of this Constitution. I mean, there were a lot of accolades that came out of that debate. But what was even more important was the paradigm shift in the ratification debates that occurred in Massachusetts, because they were the first state to actually insert recommended amendments to the Constitution for Congress to consider. Interesting. So every other state after Massachusetts, they all started adding their recommendations and or requests for amendments to the Constitution. So leaping forward, on May 4th, in the very first session of Congress, 1789, James Madison stood up in the first session of Congress and announced that he was going to have efforts, and in a couple of weeks he would bring forth his ideas on how they could move forward with generating a set of Bill of Rights. Well, if you understood what happened later on in that month, he got up again. I think it was the 25th or something like that. He got up and said, you know, I now submit that we need to do this. And do we do this in a subcommittee or a committee of the whole, you know, the whole body of Congress? And they recommended a subcommittee. But first and foremost, they all said, no, we do not need this. Let us kick the tires on this new Constitution before we start throwing amendments at it. Madison reminded them, and it wasn't until the next day where New York, I believe it was first New York, that turned in their petition for an Article 5 convention, and then Virginia turned in their petition. Their intent with these petitions was nefarious, because they were trying to undermine the sovereignty of the United States in getting all of those powers that they had just delegated to the United States back to the states. Literally, they were looking to destroy this Constitution. And that was due to the avarice and the greed of power that both Clinton and Henry and the rest of these men. I know a lot of people look highly upon Henry. He was a great man. But he, too, was susceptible to the ego and the mind in thinking that way. Let me just say this. We're out of time, so we will get back into this hopefully tomorrow. Hopefully when my throat heals tonight that I'll be able to get this next show ready and out. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.